Welcome to Your Life Reset, a Virta Health podcast series. I'm your host, Teresa Link, and in this series, we'll hear from people on their Virta journey, the wins, failures, moments of adversity, and moments of joy they're experiencing along the way. So sit back, relax, and listen as we unwrap the truly human experience of Virta. Welcome back, everyone. On today's episode of Your Life Reset, we're covering a topic that's been considered fairly controversial in the medical community. So how many of you, raise your hands, don't be shy, have heard that low-carb diets can help you lose weight but are dangerous for your heart? So as a dietitian, this is what I was taught. This is what most of the medical community has been taught. So what's the real truth here? What's the connection between low-carb diets and heart health? Well, thankfully, we've got an expert to help us untangle this sticky subject. So today, I'd like to give a warm welcome to Dr. Frank Dumont. Glad to have you here.
My pleasure.
So Dr. Dumont, you have been a physician and medical director here at Virta for nearly 6 years. I recall our first conversation back in 2018, kind of feels like a lifetime ago, just thinking to myself, wow, there are more doctors who believe in this approach. It was so exciting. So tell me, what initially sparked your interest in a low-carb ketogenic diet?
Well, it certainly wasn't what I was taught in medical school. In fact, I was trained in a very traditional way, and I spent the first 20 years of my medical practice as a primary care physician, basically doing what I was taught to do in medical school. But what ultimately drove me to change the course that I was following was that I was getting pretty disheartened watching my patients get worse over time. What I realized is I was seeing very few cures. I was seeing very few reversals. What I was really seeing was people trying really hard to do the things that they thought were the right things to do for their health. We as a system were trying to do a lot of things to try to improve their health. I was prescribing a lot of medications, as I was taught to do, to try to help people's health. And yet they were getting worse year after year. And yet every once in a while, I would have someone where I'd talk to them about nutritional changes and options and exercise, and they would really go home with that and say, I'm going to implement this. And they would come back transformed. They would come back with the numbers all looking better, losing weight, feeling better, pain resolving, energy level improving. And those rare cases when that occurred got me very excited about what the potential was for lifestyle to really do much more than I had ever been taught that it could do. And that led me to doing more reading and more looking into the research. And that eventually led me to the research behind what we do here at Virta.
You know, it's a familiar story here at Virta. So many people who work here, in particular, those on our coaching and clinical teams, have described a similar career trajectory, you know, driven by this disheartening feeling that we've been giving the wrong information. Information that's making our patients worse. So for those who sought a different path, you know, many of us got here in a similar way. In fact, nearly everyone who's become passionate about the science behind a low-carb ketogenic approach has had an aha moment. So what was yours?
Oh, it's, you know, circumstances are funny in the way that they lead you down a pathway you didn't even know existed. So I had a very interesting encounter with an elite trail runner. I was actually using him as a prop, so to speak. He was up on stage with me running on a treadmill, and we were doing a lactate threshold test on him in front of an audience at a U.S. trail running conference. And as we were chatting before doing this exercise to demonstrate what lactate threshold was, what lactate testing was, I was asking him about his season because he was having a breakout season, just doing amazingly well. And what he told me was that the reason he was doing so well, even though he was nearly 40 at that point in time, was that he had fat adapted. And that was something I had never heard before. And so rather than me blowing him off, and saying, what does this guy know? He's not medically trained. Or rather than him blowing me off as one more physician who just doesn't know anything but thinks he does, we talked about it more. And what he told me is I needed to read a study called The Faster Study by Jeff Volek and Steve Finney. And that was my first real exposure to some of the research behind the power of a low-carbohydrate approach, in that case, for fueling athletic endeavors. But it led me ultimately to the book, The Art and Science of Low-Carbohydrate Living, which was a book written by Drs. Finney and Volek.
Indeed, all paths tend to lead to The Art and Science of Low-Carbohydrate Living by Drs. Finney and Volek.
There's a lot of good research out there. It's just that you have to have a pathway that eventually leads you to discover it.
Dr. Dumont, thanks for giving us a peek into your background and what ultimately brought you here. With that, Let's dive into the topic at hand today, which is blood lipids. So can you briefly explain the different types of blood lipids and how they impact heart health?
So that is a complex question. And I think that I'll start with maybe just talking a little bit about the standard lipid panel. Most of us have had many experiences where we go in to see the doctor and we've had a cholesterol panel or a lipid panel ordered. But what that actually demonstrates and how to interpret it is really quite complex. What we're really talking about, though, is the amount of cholesterol, a particular chemical, in a given amount of blood, and also the amount of fats in a particular form called triglycerides in a given amount of blood, and how it's packaged in different ways. And so, you know, we talk about the amount of cholesterol. When you see your total cholesterol level, that's the actual cholesterol level. When you see the triglyceride level, that's the actual triglyceride level. And let's start out by just reminding people that these are very important chemicals. They make up an important part of our cell membranes that help our cells behave the way they're supposed to. They're important aspects of how we make hormones that allow us to communicate in our body to make our body function the way that it should. Fats are very important as well, fatty acids. They also help us to make up things like cell membranes. They also help us with regard to energy. They're a very important energy source for us, both in terms of usability and also storability. So these are really important chemicals. In fact, we can't live without them. But there are some interesting aspects of them. The first is that they're not water soluble, meaning that they don't actually dissolve in water. And the problem that the body faces is that it needs to get things like cholesterol and fatty acids to different places, and it does that through the bloodstream, which is water-based. And so the way that the body has figured out a way around this is basically to package things like cholesterol and triglycerides into particles or packages that are basically surrounded by proteins. And these are called lipoprotein particles. So it's basically a protein shell, if you will, that allows that to be transported through this water-based blood to wherever it needs to go. But it allows us to then carry these very important chemicals like cholesterol and triglycerides where they need to be. And the different types of lipoprotein particles are part of what we report on. And so LDL is low-density lipoprotein. So that's one particular form of packaging. And then there's also HDL or high-density lipoprotein, which is another type of particle. And the way that we've traditionally thought about these is that the HDL particles that contain cholesterol, the high-density ones, tend to be, quote, heart-healthy, and the low-density ones, the LDL cholesterol particles, tend to be less healthy from a heart standpoint. But in truth, it's not quite that simple. But when you get a lipid panel back, those are the types of things that you're going to see is what is your total cholesterol level? What is the triglyceride level? What is the LDL cholesterol level or LDL-C, the amount of cholesterol that's within those particular types of packages? What's the amount of HDL cholesterol, the amount of cholesterol in a given amount of blood in that particular type of high density package?
That's a lot of information, a lot to unpack there. And it really emphasizes how incredibly complex this topic is. So let's assume I'm a patient in my doctor's office. What is it that my doctor is looking for when I get my cholesterol levels checked? And how do I know what's good, what's bad, and how they might interpret that?
Yeah, so that's the key question. I mean, that's why we do any test in the first place is, you know, how can that test actually be helpful? And the reason that we use cholesterol panels or lipid panels in the first place is to try to gauge risk, to try to understand what someone's particular risk is. And a lot of times we're really focused around the metabolic health of individuals or the heart risk of individuals, the risk of having a heart attack or having a stroke. So the things that we've traditionally thought about are that when the total cholesterol level is high, that generally has been associated, we've thought, with an increased risk of things like heart disease. And the same thing is true with things like the LDL-C, the LDL cholesterol level, that traditionally we've thought about that as increasing the heart risk. In contrast, when you look at the HDL cholesterol level, we've associated a low HDL-C level with an increase in heart risk. So, you know, those are the types of things that we're generally looking for, trying to gauge what someone's risk is and whether we need to do something different, whether we need to intervene medically. The one other thing that I will just mention is with what we focus on here at Virta, which is metabolic health, that when you see a really high triglyceride level and a really low HDL-C level, that usually is a pretty good indication of insulin resistance, which is what's at the heart of metabolic problems. And so that's another thing that we now look for to try to understand what someone's metabolic risk is going forward. But the bottom line is, and I think unfortunately, we've been hanging our hat on the LDL-C level for decades. And there are a lot of reasons, I think, that we should be, number one, interpreting it in a lot more context really trying to understand in what context that LDL-C number exists, and then also trying to actually use it in a way that's maybe a little bit more finessed than we have traditionally.
I wanted to back up to something that you said earlier, that we've traditionally looked at elevated cholesterol, in particular, elevated LDL cholesterol, as being dangerous for heart health, and that this has been the general belief for decades. So where did that belief originate?
Well, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to answer that with as much clarity as I would like. I think part of it goes back to the fact that when people develop heart disease, when they have a heart attack, we know that that is due to cholesterol plaque buildup in the arteries, that within the walls of the arteries, you actually get deposition of cholesterol plaque that can become inflamed and can eventually rupture and can essentially block off that artery. That's what often leads to that heart attack or to a stroke if it's happening in the blood vessels to the brain. And so that tie of seeing cholesterol there, I think very early led us to believe that the problem was the cholesterol, as opposed to other aspects of a person's health that maybe predispose them to allow that cholesterol to end up in the wrong place at the wrong time. So I think the tie really goes back to that. But the thing that I think is really interesting is we've definitely had reasons to question whether LDL-C, LDL cholesterol, is really the risk factor that we think it is. And maybe one of the easiest ones to think about is the fact that when you look at people that have their first heart attack, and you look at their LDL-C levels, 50% of them actually have normal LDL-C levels. So it's only 50% that have elevated LDL-C levels. Yeah. And so if you have your heart attack, which means obviously you had a lot of things that put you at risk for a heart attack, but it's kind of a flip of a coin as to whether your LDL-C is even elevated or not, it makes you wonder whether we're really doing a very good job of assessing someone's risk if we're hanging our hat on that particular risk factor.
This LDL-C thing, it sounds like we've been hanging our hats on something that we haven't known to actually be true. I mean, that's pretty dangerous.
So I'm not saying that we shouldn't ever measure it, but I am certainly saying that I think that we have a lot of reason to interpret it with a bit more context than we have traditionally.
So how do nutritional changes affect this?
So maybe I'll take a step back and just talk first about what happens when people lower their carbohydrate intake, because there are some pretty common changes that we see in the lipid panel. The first one that we see that we really do believe is favorable is that decrease in the triglycerides that it sounds like you yourself have experienced. Triglycerides go down pretty dramatically in most cases, and that's probably a good thing from a heart risk standpoint. Also, the HDL cholesterol tends to go up. And remember, HDL-C has generally been associated with a lower cardiac risk. And so we think that's probably a good thing as well. But when you look at the LDL-C, so the amount of cholesterol within those LDL particles within a given volume of blood, the LDL-C on average in our clinical trial went up by about 10% by the end of the first year for people lowering their carbohydrate intake significantly. So 10% is not a very big increase. But again, if you're really looking at that as one of the key risk factors for heart disease, you might be very worried about that. But here's the interesting thing. Remember, we're not talking about the LDL particles there, the number of particles. We're talking about the amount of cholesterol in the LDL particles within a given volume of blood. And so there are different ways of having the LDL-C go up. One of them is by ending up with a lot more small LDL particles. And we actually do think that there's reason to believe that that is probably not a good thing from a heart standpoint. Having more LDL particles with a small amount of cholesterol within them is probably not a good thing. In contrast, another way of raising the LDL-C is to have more cholesterol within each one of those particles. They're kind of fatter particles. In fact, they're called sometimes light fluffy LDL. So they have more cholesterol within them, and those appear not to have that same potential to cause heart risk in the same way that the small dense LDL is. In a way, you could almost think of the analogy of cars on the road carrying a couple of small people, you know, a couple of people, like small cars with two people, and having just hundreds and hundreds, thousands and thousands on the road, and what the risk is for something like a traffic accident. And in contrast, maybe having a much fewer number of big buses that are carrying a lot more people. But there are fewer vehicles on the road, and there's less risk of them running into each other. You know, so there's different ways to raise the LDL-C. And interestingly, when we looked at the more advanced lipid panels in the clinical trial, that 10% increase in LDL-C that we saw in people lowering their carb intake was actually due to the particles getting bigger, lighter, fluffier, probably safer from a metabolic and cardiovascular standpoint. So even that change in numbers that people sometimes worry about, if they only look at a simple lipid panel, might not really be the full picture.
Okay, so this is starting to make sense now. I'm curious, Have there been cases where you've noticed a patient's lipid profile perhaps worsened on a low-carb ketogenic diet? And then, you know, how did you address that type of situation?
Yeah, it's a great question. And so the first thing I will say is, remember, the numbers we've been talking about to this point have been from the clinical trial. And so those are averages. You know, that's what you see on average for the population. But each person is different. Each person's physiology is different. And so it becomes so important for each person in their experiment, N of one, you know, where they're doing something with their body, to follow that, to gather data, to see where they're starting from, to see where they go, and then to interpret it with their expert team. You know, whether it's the Virta team or whether it's their PCP or their cardiologist. So you have to be looking at those numbers. And so have we seen individuals where the numbers have worsened? Absolutely. Now, the first reason, and probably the most common for that, is someone that is trying to make nutritional changes but hasn't gotten there yet. So one of the things that we know we're trying to do is help people listen to their body and understand where their metabolism is telling them they need to be in terms of a level of carbohydrate restriction that effectively flips a switch. You know, when they're able to lower the carb intake enough, insulin levels in the body go down. And we haven't really touched on insulin, but insulin has a profound and negative impact on things like the lipids. And so, and what your body does with regard to burning or storing energy forms like fat. And so when you can lower the carbs enough, you know, then the insulin goes down, the metabolic switch flips, and things tend to improve. But there are some individuals that are trying, but haven't gotten there yet. They're working their way there. But if they haven't lowered the carb intake enough yet, and the insulin levels are still high, but maybe they're already starting to ramp up the types of fats that they're eating to replace the carbs that they haven't actually lowered yet, lowered enough yet, in those situations, sometimes the lipid panel worsens. And that's another place where we can listen to the body and say, okay, where do we want to go from here? How do we adjust from here? So in those cases, the focus is still on the nutrition. It's actually saying, how do we do the nutrition? How do we continue to listen to your body? How do we do it better? Now, there are some individuals, and this is fairly rare, but there are some individuals where the LDL-C goes up dramatically. And by dramatically, you know, it might go up by, you know, 100%. So, and I'm one of those individuals, you know, so I'm someone where my LDL-C went up from, I think, somewhere in the mid-90s or so, up to somewhere in the order of 170. So it went up pretty dramatically with that. We tend to see that in people that are younger, people that are more active, people that tend to be actually a little bit metabolically healthier. And we think that there's a pretty good chance that's a different phenomenon entirely. But the bottom line is, when you see something like that happening that's a little bit different than the norm, that's where that individualization and really working with your team comes into play, where you have to ask those questions of, okay, what does that mean for you? Let's understand this a little bit more. Do we need to do further testing? Do we need to adjust the nutrition? Do we need to, in some cases, consider something like a medication adjustment? So it really does at that point depend on the individual, but those cases are more rare.
Okay, well, that's good to hear. So Dr. Dumont, here is the question everyone wants to know the answer to. There's often concern about the high intake of fat, in particular saturated fats, on a low carbohydrate ketogenic diet. So what's the association between this high intake of fat and how it might affect your health?
Yeah, so it's another great question, and not one where I'm going to be able to give you a very straightforward answer, but there's a lot of data that I can share. But I'm going to start out by saying that people can do a low carbohydrate approach very differently. And so, for example, we have some individuals that do a very low carb approach that's a higher fat approach where they actually don't take in higher amounts of saturated fats. But there are other people who enjoy animal-based fats, whether that's dairy or whether it's fattier meats, and that becomes a more regular part of their nutrition. So there are different ways to do it depending upon your comfort level. But what I would say is, when we look at the increase in saturated fats, that it doesn't appear to be doing all of the bad things that we were taught that it would do over the last several decades, what I was taught in medical school. And so again, going back to the clinical trial that Virta started back in 2015, we actually decided this was something we needed to look at very carefully, because we knew that that was one of the questions. People are eating more fat. They're eating maybe more saturated fat. Is this a problem? So we looked at 26 different cardiovascular risk factors, the things that we know have been statistically associated with an increased risk of having a heart attack. What we found in those 26 by the end of the first year is that 22 of them improved. The vast majority of them improved. They didn't get worse. They got better. 22 out of 26. Wow. Three of them didn't change. So three of them were neutral. Okay, this didn't change much. That's like the LDL particle number. That didn't change significantly. Only one out of 26 got slightly worse. That was the LDL-C that we've already talked about. So when you start thinking about what is it that puts someone at risk for a heart attack, and we think of all the different things we think contribute, the vast majority of them actually improve, or at the very worst seem to be neutral, and with only one slightly worse, you know, when you adopt this kind of a lifestyle. And so when you calculate a person's cardiovascular risk score, and there are calculators to do this, what it actually showed was by the end of the first year, the risk score went down by 12%. It didn't go up, it actually went down. The other thing that I guess I would add is that there was a different study that was done by, again, one of our founders, Jeff Volek, that was looking at saturated fat levels within the bloodstream. Because that was, again, one of the questions is, well, if you eat more saturated fat, well, then you end up with more saturated fat floating around in your bloodstream causing trouble. And it turns out when he looked at this very carefully, what he found was that in this particular group where they weren't trying to restrict saturated fats at all, they were doing low carb, higher fat, eat as much saturated fat as feels appropriate for you, eating to satiety, that these people were eating 3 to 4 times as much saturated fat as the average individual in the control population. But here's the interesting thing. When they measured saturated fat levels in the bloodstream, they were lower, not higher. Eating more saturated fat by a fair bit, but the bloodstream levels were lower. And I think what that really speaks to is that if you get insulin levels down, and I think, you know, I really think of that as being the true troublemaker here, is the insulin levels being high. If you can get insulin levels back down to a normal level, then the body will burn those fats instead of storing those fats. And so, you know, when you start to think about all the things that we've been taught to worry about with regard to eating fat, is that going to cause fatty liver disease? Is that going to cause weight gain? Is that going to increase inflammation? Is it going to lead to all of these other problems? What we find is that it's really about the context there as well. People are able to eat more saturated fat and use effectively saturated fat really well, as the body seems to be set up to do, as long as the insulin levels are low enough. And that's why it appears that when these people lower their carb levels enough and insulin levels go down to where they should be, that the metabolism starts to improve in all of these different fronts and seems to do much, much better with that increase in fat intake. I know there was a long answer to a short question, but it's a complex issue.
Definitely complex. And I now know the topic of our next podcast together, which is going to be all about insulin. I can't wait. Okay, so Dr. DeMont, earlier in the podcast, you spoke a bit about the importance of individualization. And no two patients are going to have the exact same outcome with their lipids or the exact same follow-up. So how do you go about approaching dietary or medication recommendations for patients that, you know, may have pre-existing lipid disorders or maybe pre-existing cardiovascular disease, as you've kind of alluded to earlier?
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. It needs to be individualized. And so our hope is always to help people understand where they're starting from, follow up appropriately to see where things are going, and then help them come up with a plan that really makes sense for them in the context of their medical issues. So for example, some people come in and their main problem is that their triglycerides are through the roof. They're high enough that it even predisposes them to problems like pancreatitis, which is something no one should ever have to experience. When someone restricts carbohydrates well enough for them, those numbers can improve dramatically. So if that's the lipid disorder that they're trying to deal with, the nutrition might be the solution. Now, in contrast, there might be other individuals that have already had a heart attack or already had a stroke. And in those situations, they're already working with their local team to do what they can with medications, even medicines that are affecting things like their lipid panel, to lower their chances of ever having another heart attack or stroke. And in those situations, it might very well be appropriate to continue on that medicine, even with nutritional changes. And in some situations, maybe make some adjustments to what's going on nutritionally. And that's one of the beauties of working closely with a coach and with a medical team that can understand your situation and make those fine-tuning adjustments. Now, in the setting of diabetes, it turns out that for all individuals with type 2 diabetes who are over the age of 40, the risk of having a heart attack is high enough that it's actually recommended to consider things like statin therapy, a cholesterol-lowering medication. Mm-hmm. And so that's, again, the kind of thing that a person should be having those types of discussions, saying, here's where I am, here's my age, here's the medical conditions I have, talking with their team members, their medical team members, to really make the decision that makes the most sense for them.
Very well put. I'd like to switch gears just a little bit here and talk about some emerging trends. Are there any new findings in the field that you're particularly excited about?
Well, I think you know, when I think about what we focus on with metabolic health, what I actually get pretty excited about is some of the areas that start to go beyond that. So again, our area of focus is helping lower their carbohydrate intake enough to start to see things change in their body. And when you lower the carbohydrate intake enough and insulin levels go down enough, like we've talked about, people start metabolizing or breaking down fatty acids. They start using fats as fuels. And when they do that in the liver, a particular group of chemicals is generated as kind of a byproduct, if you will, of that, called ketones, that most people have heard of. And now these ketones, we generally have used as a bit of a marker of, have people flipped the metabolic switch yet? Have they gotten to where they need to get metabolically? But it turns out it's much more than that. And this is part of where I get excited. Ketones actually are very important energy molecules. Our body can use ketones as fuels, just like they can use glucose as a fuel or fatty acids as a fuel. They can use ketones as a fuel. And it turns out that ketones are probably a preferred fuel source for certain tissues in the body, like skeletal muscle, like the brain, like heart muscle tissue. And so that actually brings up the potential then of us actually being able to use higher levels of ketones in someone's body to actually help them do better with certain things. Like, could it help with things like heart function? Could it help in certain circumstances with brain function when people are struggling with neurologic conditions? Now, a lot of this is pretty early, but there's a lot of suggestion in the literature that we might really be able to help people in ways that are very, very far past what we're focused on right now at our company with regard to things like diabetes and weight. The other thing that I get really excited about is another aspect of ketones, which is it turns out they are what we call signaling molecules. They communicate from one place in the body, from one group of cells in the body to another group of cells or another place in the body. And one of the places that they do that is at the very level of our genes. It's what we call epigenetics. And so epigenetics doesn't mean the genes are changing. The genes are what they are. But epigenetics is about what things are happening in an environment that turn on or turn off certain genes. And it turns out that when ketones are in higher levels in the body, that certain genes are turned on, certain ones are turned off. And one of the ways that that appears to manifest is with decreased inflammation. And that we know now how important inflammation is. Inflammation is really important in terms of the risk for cancer, the risk for autoimmune disease, the risk for that cholesterol plaque building up within the arteries of the body. So the bottom line is, if you can lower the inflammation enough, it seems like it's likely to affect the body in a number of ways very positively. And that's an epigenetic or a signaling effect of ketones. And so we've only begun to understand that and therefore only begun to think about how we could tap into that to really help our patients.
Okay, so there's a lot of excitement going on here, not just new discoveries for type 2 diabetes and metabolic syndrome, but also how ketones can affect heart function and other organs in the body. And you also mentioned how some athletes can perform better when they're in ketosis and using fat as their primary fuel. I know there's a lot going on in the mental health space as well. In fact, I recently interviewed someone about their experience using a ketogenic diet as an adjunct therapy for bipolar disorder. He also shared a lot of great research available on this topic. It's just a really great time to be in the field. So Dr. DeMont, we will need a part 2, maybe a part 3 and 4 on this topic. But as this episode comes to a close, what key takeaways would you like our listeners to remember?
Well, so the first thing I would start with is the big picture, which is that cardiovascular disease is still the number one killer of adults in this country. It is a huge problem. It causes a lot of suffering and it causes early death. And one of the biggest risk factors for cardiovascular disease is diabetes and metabolic dysfunction. We know when people are not doing well, that is one of the biggest risk factors metabolically for having a heart attack. And so anything that you can do to actually make that diabetes better, turn it around, is probably one of the best things you can do for health. And that's one of the reasons I think why there's so much excitement about this particular nutritional approach, because it improves diabetes, can get people to sub-diabetes levels, can get them off of dangerous medications. And if you're doing that and decreasing the risk of a heart attack at the same time, that's probably a very, very good thing for that individual. So from a big picture standpoint, I think we're addressing one of the key issues that puts people at risk for really suffering. The second thing is that the recent research really appears to be reassuring. When you look at things like our clinical trial and what happened to the 26 cardiovascular risk factors, things were not getting worse everywhere, as we might have expected based on what we were told 2 decades ago. Rather, again, the vast majority of cardiovascular risk factors appear to be improving with this kind of a nutritional approach, not getting worse. And then the third thing is that no matter what the studies show, what the averages are, people really need to be looking at this individually. That it's really important to know where you're starting from, to see where you go, and then to be working with a good team to help you be able to interpret that and ultimately come up with a plan that works well for you.
All right, everyone. Well, if you made it to the end of this episode, you've earned your honorary doctorate in lipidology. Thanks again, Dr. Dumont, for providing your valuable expertise on this really complex subject. I know a lot of folks are asking about this, and I really hope that they find this episode, you know, not only informative, but reassuring in some ways as well. I, for one, can't wait to dive into insulin's role in inflammation on a future episode. You can be a recurring guest on our expert panel, something our listeners can look forward to. Until then, thanks again.
Thank you. Have a good day.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe and leave us a review on Apple or Spotify. And if you'd like to regain control of your metabolic health and feel like yourself again, check us out at vertahealth.com/join. Your Life Reset is for informational purposes only and shouldn't be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Contact your provider if you suspect you have a medical problem. I'll chat with you all again soon. Until then, stay inspired, my friends.